Welcome back to Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz. We're broadcasting live from the Kintec Studio. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at dunbarlumber.com.
You were bopping to that pretty hard.
Yeah, man. It was good. I liked it. I was digging it.
I bet it feels really good for whoever picks the music and sees Jamie bopping. That's when you know.
A big self-esteem boost.
Because it doesn't happen often with Tom's choices.
Don't let that control your mood. Don't ignore me. Don't let that.
My day has been made.
No. Don't rely on me for that, Zach. Absolutely
not. We looked at each other
and
went, Jamie likes this one.
Well, I'm glad. I'm glad you guys are really locked in on my reaction. This hour of Canucks Talk brought to you by Rack Steel. Rack Steel has the expertise to get you operating faster with forklifts and pallet racking in stock. Visit them online at racksteel.com. Lots more that we can dig into here, but should we do a little talk it talk here on the show? Because of course that is, it's been a theme for the last couple of weeks, I think, is conversation and speculation about what the future holds for Rick Tocchet beyond this season. And now with the opening kind of official in Philadelphia, it's even more front page, you know, on the radar with the Flyers firing John Tortorella. We've already talked this week about the history with Tocchet, obviously as a player in Philadelphia, beloved player, relationship with Keith Jones, who's the president there. A lot of reasons why it might make sense as an opening for him. But, you know, as Rick Dhaliwal said on his show, like, let's not rush to any conclusions here. It's not as if there's been a decision made. People are starting to talk about this as if it's a done deal. But there is still very much a pathway to Rick Tocchet staying and being the coach of the Canucks this year. I think more than anything, I look at it and I look at the dynamic shaping up with Philly. Boston has an interim coach right now. Who knows what the future holds for Peter Laviolette and the New York Rangers.
Like, there could Chicago's be, the other one.
Chicago. There could be some very high-profile jobs available this summer, and that, to me, increases Rick Tocchet's leverage more than anything, more so than meaning, well, he's definitely going to go to one of those jobs.
Yeah, in fact, it's important, as we caption this conversation, to note that Rick Tocchet is not a pending unrestricted free agent. If he was a true quote-unquote lame duck coach, you think we wouldn't be talking about it every day?
Yeah.
On this program, Canucks Talk, the Canucks have a team option. They've reiterated it multiple times. And look, they intend to utilize that right. I mean, Rick Tocchet is this team's coach. This team is planning to have Rick Tocchet behind the bench, whether that's on the team option or on a long-term extension.
Now,
and the club's preference, by the way, would be, of course, to do a long-term extension.
Oh, yeah, of course. Because I get it. Hey, we have the option. That feels like you're opening a big can of worms. If Tocchet is like, you know, you're talking extension and you can't really agree on anything. Tocchet doesn't seem that keen. And you say, well, tough luck. If you're coaching anywhere next year, it's with us because we have the option. So we'll do that. We'll pick up the option and we'll go into a final year with you unsigned beyond that. Like, that's very far from an ideal position to be in. That seems very fraught in a lot of different ways.
It does in some ways, Jamie, but also I think it dovetails pretty nicely, to be totally honest with you, with the position of this team, right? It's not as if, right? Like, you asked me why would they prefer Verlander to go down to the American League, and I answered quite matter-of-factly, because it's about getting him prepared to be an NHL contributor game one next year, right? Why are they going to be aggressive this summer trying to add multiple star-level top six forwards, especially if they can't retain Brock Besser? Because it's all about next year. Next year is an essential season for this team. Quinn Hughes is going to become extension eligible on the other side. Thatcher Demko is going to expire on the other side, become a UFA. Connor Garland is going to expire on the other side. I mean, given all of that, what's one more Rick Tocchet, right? We want to get back to contending. We want to go all in on next season. We need to make the case to the best defenseman on the planet that we can win here.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying? Like, if that's your direction, and it is.
If you're already dealing with a ton of uncertainty, starting with Quinn Hughes, why not throw Rick Tocchet in there is basically what you're saying. Well, right? Like you're already going to be at kind of a turning point.
Hey, we want
moment,
you,
a pivot moment for your franchise. So, hey, okay, that's fine. We're at a pivot one with our coach too.
We want you to be here long term. But if you're reluctant to be, then look, this is our vision. We're going to go and do everything we can to convince you that we can win. Just like we're doing with Quinn. Just like we're going to do with our players. Like, here it is.
Yeah. It is, like, that's hardball. I think it's fair to say that's hardball, right? If you have a coach and you have the team option and extension talks don't go anywhere and you basically say, well, whatever, we're picking up the team option, that you're driving a hard bargain there. I think it's fair to
sure,
say.
Sure, but that's...
That's fine.
But also, if past behavior indicates future behavior best, like, this is what the Canucks did with Bruce Boudreau when they had the mutual option. They immediately picked up their side of it.
Uh-huh.
And then, you know, Boudreau's, like, contractual language gave him time to make his decision, but there was obviously immense pressure put on behind the scenes, and he decided, what, 2.5 weeks early?
Yeah. So that also kind of gets, though, my point about, like, the relationship. That was a bad relationship.
Well, sure, but also it was a bad relationship not because of how that went down.
It was a bad relationship prior to that.
Yeah.
I'm sure that didn't help.
No, I think it was par for the course. To be totally honest with you, like, I don't think it hurt because everyone knew the score.
Mm-hmm. Now, the reason I bring up the hardball thing is, and this text comes in, could Rick Tocchet not just resign from the position if he decides he doesn't want to coach the Canucks next year? That's where it gets, like, he could, obviously you can quit. A contract doesn't make you an indentured servant. You can always walk away from a job. He wouldn't be able to coach in the NHL then, I don't think.
No.
You know, you can't, like, quit from your contracted NHL job and then go get another NHL coaching position.
Correct.
But I do think that's another interesting dynamic here is Rick Tocchet's past on the TNT broadcast, and you could probably do that.
Listen.
But
if you think Rick Tocchet would resign or quit, You haven't spent a lot of time talking to or covering Rick Tocchet.
He gave the quote to IMAC this week, right? I'm not a quitter.
Yeah, you don't have the measure of the man I don't even want to get into that as a possibility just because I don't like there's nothing we've ever seen from Tocchet that suggests that would even be a weapon or like a thing to throw out there to gain leverage in talks. Like that's not who he is.
I also just think even if you're thinking of it purely from a rational, you know, self-interest, put yourself in the best position to continue to be a coach position, that's the kind of move that could damage your reputation around the industry, right? Being perceived to walk away from an NHL job that you're under contract to go back to the broadcasting industry, that's the kind of thing that could take you from an extremely in-demand coach right now that lots of other teams would be very interested in to maybe one who's like, people are like, yeah, I'm not sure, right? Like that's a move with some risk attached to it if he ever did go down that road.
Happy opening day, by the way. Blue Jays have given up their first home run of the season.
Let's go.
Yay.
And by the way, if I've been told to mention this.
Yeah.
If you hate our show and you want to listen to something else, you can listen to the Blue Jays on the Fan 590 web broadcast.
Yeah. Well, I've got Rutschman.
So
I've got Rutschman in my same game parlay. Rutschman home run. So that's off to a good start. First
inning
hit, baby. Let's go. Betting against my team.
Love the Blue Jays.
love the Blue Jays. What channel's the Mariners game on, Jamie?
Us, later.
Oh, okay, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I was going to make a joke about there not being demand for it.
No. No, we're playing it. There's obviously tons of demand for it.
My bad. Sorry. Let's backpedal on the Rick Tocchet conversation one last time and tie it with a bow. Guy's not a free agent. Canucks view him as their coach. Canucks will exercise their option here. So as much as we're going to keep reacting to this, like if the Rangers miss the playoffs and Laviolette gets fired, when the Bruins announce that they're changing coaches after this season, when the Chicago does the same, like this is going to keep bubbling up and being a topic of conversation. But look, until management, Tocchet, sit down, like the ball is in this club's court on this. Right. And so as much speculation as is rampant around the industry, I think the reality is that Tocchet is Vancouver's coach and a lot of this is going to be wind.
All right. We will talk a little bit more about the job opening in Philly with Kevin Kurz in the next segment. But before we get there, you had mentioned Elias Pettersson, DPD, and the speed he hit in the first period last night. Somebody else texted in, did everyone else already know how fast DPD can skate? And that certainly caught a lot of people's attention today. It's out there on social media. I think the fourth fastest speed for a defenseman in the NHL this year. And it kind of ties into something that has popped up a lot after these last two games, which is Canucks defenders making offensive plays. And of course, in the Devils game, it was Marcus Pettersson and Derek Forbort from down low with primary assists to set up big goals. I mean, Derek Forbort scores a goal that, you know, Ilya Sorokin obviously should have had last night, but he's still up in the rush in position to take the shot. Even going back a couple of months now, like, we've seen Tyler Myers be very aggressive offensively and pretty effective offensively as well. And it is a new part of how this Canucks team plays that was just completely absent earlier in the season. And it's not too hard to figure out why, because early in the season, it was a lot of Noah Juulsen and Vincent Desharnais and Mark Friedman. And you didn't have the guys who could consistently make plays like that. And Derek Forbort, not that he's some high-end offensive defenseman, but we're talking about him making some plays in recent games. He was out of the lineup a lot early in the season. And it is, we've talked so much about, you know, hey, they traded their center depth, but now they have this good defense core. It's nice to see that it's not just making a difference defensively, that it's not just, oh, you stabilized on the back end. Because how often have we talked on the history of this show of needing blue liners who could contribute to the attack? And I'm not sitting here and saying all of a sudden they're high end at that or anything, but just the increased mobility and the willingness they've shown recently to get the defenders involved in the play and try to make plays, it is a breath of fresh air. And again, as we sit here and look towards not just the final 10 games of the season, but how this team could look next year as well. Well, their defense is pretty set next year. We know generally who's going to be a part of it. And if they can incorporate that as a more consistent wrinkle, that's the kind of thing we've been waiting to see out of this team for a long, long time.
Yeah, and look, I think you can't ignore the personnel upgrades.
No, it's a huge part of it.
Derek Forbert's been in and out of the lineup for much of the season. I mean, how many games has he played? Is he at 40? Probably not. Maybe he's just about to get there.
But he was especially
46.
He was especially in and out of the lineup early in the season.
Desharnais, what wasn't going to be able to play like this. Noah Juulsen. Right? Carson Soucy, not exactly his strength, although he could contribute here and there. You bring in Marcus Pettersson, you have Elias Pettersson or Mancini, because Mancini's got wheels. And then Derek Forbort, he's the engine of this offense right now. little saucer pass on the Lekkerimäki goal. Rush, wrist shot goal. Blows by Ilya Sorokin. Derek Forbort.
That's right. Two goals in 10 games.
Oh boy.
He's heating up.
Late charge for the Norris.
A 15 goal pace.
Move
over 82 games.
Move over, Quinn Hughes. Derek Forbort has arrived. I love to see it, by the way. But Derek Forbort is now like the least mobile, least skilled guy, and we've seen him.
And he can do stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whereas before, if it was like Forbort, Desharnais, Juulsen all in the lineup, he's the third or fourth best offensive defenseman, right?
Okay, so what about a world where your third pair is Myers and Elias Pettersson, and your second pair is Villander and Marcus Pettersson?
That's pretty interesting to me.
Right? It does raise your floor in terms of generating offense, too, if you've got a quality mobile blue line group that... Yeah, if you've got a quality mobile blue line group that you then... like in terms of what you need with top six forwards and with forward depth, like, you've got more options. It's going to be a lot easier for this team to accomplish something that they never have in the last decade, which is both defend and attack at a high level at the same time. Right? Like, even last year's team didn't do that, right? They couldn't generate.
Nope.
So I think this defense core creates a totally new paradigm of what this team can potentially accomplish.
This text comes in. That defense of the Canucks has bled grade A chances only to be bailed out by Demko and Lankinen.
I think that's fair to say for last night.
Yeah, I don't think it's been the case routinely over the last couple of weeks, though. But Demko had to make some huge saves last night. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
But that happens. And again, especially if you're trying to be more aggressive, if you're telling your defenseman to be more aggressive up in the play because you know how profound your offensive limitations are. Yeah, that might happen once in a while.
We've lost 200 point centerman and Elias Lindholm over the past 12 months. We need our D to take more chances. That feels like a pretty rational reaction there, right?
And even like Philip Hedl, if he was in the lineup, he'd be the guy where it's like, okay, this is your chance, Philip Hedl. You're the most talented offensive player we have. Not quite, right, with Brock Besser and stuff, but certainly the most talented center they have. You would be relying on him massively, and he's not available to you either. So they've obviously had to adjust based on the limitations of their lineup, but my hope is that it carries over to even when the lineup isn't as limited, whether that's when you get Elias Pettersson and Nils Höglander back at some point this year, whether it's going into next season and maybe you've made some big additions in the top six. To me, this should be a staple of what this team looks like and what their identity is, hey, all of a sudden you've got a bunch of defensemen who can skate, who can chip in offensively, who have a little bit of instinct. You have to use that. It makes everything else so much easier on the offensive end. And we know how much they've struggled to generate this year.
Yeah, and you still need to get the right fit, right? But can you create an environment where, provided that you have some speed, right, provided that you're able to go to the net, right, that you're in an environment where it's easier to succeed offensively.
Mm-hmm.
As a forward, almost the opposite of what the Panthers have done, but with defenders, and frankly, almost the opposite of what Jim Rutherford has traditionally done in terms of his roster construction.
You're right. His thing has been like, build the system so you can plug any defenseman in.
Right.
And it'll work. It didn't work so much this year.
No.
Because I think that was part of the philosophy. It was like, hey, big guy, Desharnais, great. We'll build the system and we'll plug you in and it'll be awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I think the truth is, and Sherwood's success last night, 3-point game, right? 17 goals, could hit 20, hits record. And the success that he's had as an unrestricted free agent, you know, hit, maybe a double. You want to call it a double?
Sure.
Meh. So maybe it's a base hit with an error. You've reached second, but it's a base hit with an error. And the reason for that, the reason that I'll say they got to second with it, but there was an error on the play, is a lot of the other bets they made didn't fly.
Mm-hmm.
Sprong didn't fly. Heinen didn't fly. Desharnais didn't fly, right? Whereas you contrast that with what we saw last year. Cole flew. Soucy was a massive hit in year one. Blueger, obviously. Pew Suter's a stand-up double.
Oh, at least. Are you
at
kidding
least,
me?
Yeah, you're right.
20-plus goals, top-line center minutes for 1.6?
Yeah, killing it and never skates more than 20 miles per hour. It's amazing. So, you know, I think there's a truth there that this management group has shown that they're pretty sharp about hunting for good contributors that fit their scheme in the bargain bin, but it's hard to do. If you place four bets every year, you know, going 4-for-4 is not something
very
you're going to do every
yes.
season, right?
Yeah.
Like there's almost an element of like regression to it,
yeah.
right? Like, but if you can routinely find a Joshua here, a Sherwood there, over time you create, you know, if you're good at it, over time you'll accumulate some talent. You'll accumulate useful players. I think this organization's done it, but the truth is, I think, is a lot of the struggles we've seen early in the year, moving the puck, later in the year, generating offense. I think a lot of it can be traced back to the fact that like this year, they didn't quite hit the way they had the year previous.
Yeah, I would really,
in that market especially,
I would really like to see this version of the blue line paired with a true, at
with
least
last
one,
year's version of the forward.
Not even last year's version of the forwards, a game breaking top of the lineup offensive player. That's what I would like to see. Because
yeah.
Elias Pettersson hasn't been that.
No, he hasn't.
But I would like to see this version.
So whether it's Pettersson or someone
or
else.
Or somebody else.
Yeah.
But like a true game breaker at the top of the lineup paired with this defense core and Quinn Hughes specifically, that's something I would like to see. I would be very, very interested in watching that for an extended stretch. I hope we get it at some point next year. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. We will take a break here. As I mentioned, we'll check in on the Philadelphia Flyers. They make the coaching change today. Kevin Kurz from The Athletic will join us next. We'll talk what's next for the Flyers. Is there anything to the Rick Tocchet speculation that's running rampant here? We'll get into that with Kevin Kurz next on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650.
This sounds like we're choosing our race car driver in F-Zero.
That's so accurate.
Right?
That's a good pull.
Yeah.
I'm F-Zero. What a game.
I hear it. Yeah.
I'm definitely driving as Dark Falcon. Just letting you guys know.
I love it.
What racetrack are you picking?
Oh, man. Mute City? I like Mute City. This is the only one I could think of. Big Blue?
Big Blue is the other one. Yeah. Big Blue. I like Captain Falcon. From Smash Brothers.
Yeah. He's good. Okay. I'm a big Smash Bros. Guy. I'm not a big Captain Falcon in Smash Bros. Guy. That's a lame choice by you.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Aiden Celebrini.
Who's your main? No. Who's your main in Smash Bros.?
Well, I mean, what do I want to accomplish? Am I trying to win? I don't know.
What are you talking about?
If I'm trying to win at all. Am I trying to win at all costs against someone who's like equal to me?
Play Smash to make friends.
Yeah. No, I do. I do. I sometimes play Smash against my wife or against my 12-year-old nephew or whatever.
All right.
And in that case, I'll pick someone like fun or different so that they have a shot. But if I need to win at all costs, I'll pick Pikachu.
All right.
I'm one of those annoying Pikachu people.
I'm a Falco guy. Not Captain Falco.
Wow. Falco. Yeah, let's go.
Falco. Big Falco guy. Okay.
Sorry. Well, really quick, I've got a score update from the BU game,
yes.
And I want to link it into something that we talked about yesterday.
Very good.
So Aiden Celebrini, Canucks prospect, has scored for BU, Tom Vilander's team, in the lead 4-3. That game got a little wild.
That game got wacky towards the end of the third period.
Yes, it did. Now, Aiden Celebrini, of course, Macklin Celebrini's brother. Son of a former Vancouver-based professional soccer player. You know who else is the son of a former Vancouver-based professional hockey player? A guy we discussed
soccer
on the show yesterday.
Who?
Benjamin Kindle.
Really?
Yeah. Dad played for the Whitecaps, and his mom, I learned after doing some research yesterday, is Sarah Maglio, former Canadian international soccer player.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Anyway, bring him home.
Anyway, started asking around after our conversation yesterday. Talked to two different Dub Scouts who like him as a center.
All right.
So I'm now in.
Let's go.
Benjamin Kindle from Coquitlam, who I just learned about yesterday. I think sons of former Vancouver soccer players. That's the new inefficiency.
Yes. Well, also guys who put up 99 points in their draft year in the Dub.
That's true.
I'm into it.
Benjamin Kindle, let's go.
I'm into it.
Okay. There you go. There's your BU and Benjamin Kindle update.
Oh,
on one.
And BU has just made it 5-3. So now still just under 14 minutes remaining in the third period, but it looks like a good chance here that that Tom Vilander's season will continue in the NCAA tournament. They're up 5-3 on Ohio State, again, with just under 14 minutes. The other Jack Hughes scored the latest goal. And by the way, Tom Vilander picked up a secondary assist on the Aiden Celebrini 4-3 goal, so he gets a point on the game. We'll let you know how that one ends up here. Meant to say, by the way, we're all broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. I want to double back to the game last night a little bit. We did kind of move on from the Thatcher Demko side of things a little quickly, and that certainly in the beginning of the game, and I think you could say overall, the number one story from that game is that Thatcher Demko was excellent, made some incredible saves, kept them in it early, and really put his team in a position to win, even as his team played better and better as the game went on and ended up doing a really good job in the second half of that game. How much do you think these final 10 games, and, you know, obviously we can count it 12 as the two that Demko has started now. We know that Thatcher Demko is extension eligible after the season. How much, if at all, does what he shows in this final 10-game sample change extension talks, potential trade, appetite for a trade? Is this anything more than, hey, it's awesome to see Thatcher Demko back and playing well? Or are there implications here for what could happen with Thatcher Demko and the team down the road?
Yeah, there could be. I mean, I think the way to understand the lens through which to view what comes next for the Canucks beyond this season and down the stretch to some extent, you know, I think you'll see it in certain moves, maybe some of the college free agents that the club recruits, you know, certainly Volander and their preference there. But, you know, everything's going to be about next year, right? This team is going to push chips into the center of the table to get back to contending next year. This is not a team that's going to take a step back,
yeah.
That's going to take a longer view. This is Operation Keep Quinn Hughes, and it's about to be put into practice. And by the way, I don't like, you know, I know what you expect, right? You know, you expect this organization never takes the long view, right? Like, that's my bread and butter, right? I don't know, man. You got Quinn Hughes. You should protect that position.
Do whatever you can to try to keep him.
Protect that position.
All right, now joining us, we were able to get him on the line from The Athletic covering the Philadelphia Flyers. He is Kevin Kurz. Kevin, thanks for doing this today. I'm sure it's a very busy day for you. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. Run around a little bit, but we'll survive, right?
Yeah. So, instant reaction to the news that John Tortorella no longer the coach of the Flyers. What was your first kind of instant thought when you saw the news this morning?
Yeah, I was definitely surprised. I mean, there were no, Tuesday aside and some of the comments that he made, there were really no indications that this was coming, I thought, anyway. And, you know, you just look at some of the moves that the Flyers have made over the years. So many of them were Tortorella influenced, which to me reflects the fact that he had a pretty loud voice when it came to the front office and moves the front office was making. You go back to the end of his first year, Kevin Hayes, Ivan Provorov, Tony D'Angelo. You know, all these guys weren't guys that saw eye-to-eye with John Tortorella. They were all gone by the offseason. You look at this year, Morgan Frost and Joel Farabee get traded to Calgary. Well, both of those guys had spent time in John Tortorella's doghouse. Both of them had been subject to public criticisms of Tortorella quite frequently, you know, including getting healthy scratched. So I don't think anyone in Philadelphia was surprised that the Flyers traded those two players. So, you know, we haven't spoken with Danny Briere yet. That's going to happen in about an hour. Obviously, I know a lot of people point to those comments on Tuesday about how he said he's not interested in coaching a team in this position. I don't think it's so simple as to just draw a line from those comments to what happened today. But clearly, I think he was a little dejected, and you could tell how down he was just because of the fact that he's coaching a team that's not in the playoff race at the moment.
Does this come just generally given, like, I know that this season wasn't as good as sort of last year, but this team competes pretty hard, plays pretty well, attacks off the rush pretty well, and you know, has not been trying to win in the short term, Kevin. Does it come as a surprise that it ended like this?
Yeah, I mean, that's why it is surprising, because, you know, I know current results, or, you know, recent results aside, right, they got smoked by a bad Blackhawks team on Sunday. They got embarrassed by a good Maple Leafs team on Tuesday. Those really were it wasn't common that would happen. John Tortorella teams, particularly in the last 2 years, I mean, they would show up and they would work hard. And even before those two bad losses, I mean, they dropped games to Tampa Bay, Washington, and I'm forgetting one other. But it was a run of good teams that they were sort of hanging in. They just weren't winning them. And, you know, this is with a roster that was depleted from the trade deadline, a group that was pretty downcast after seeing so many of their good friends dealt away. I mean, Scott Laughton was the emotional heartbeat of this team. I don't think there's any question about that, considering some of the stuff that's happened lately. So I don't really pin a lot of the losses on John Tortorella. The goaltending's been terrible. You know, the one thing that they never figured out is the power play, which is still awful. But, you know, for some reason they kept around the power play coach, Rocky Thompson. I'm a little surprised they didn't fire him today, too, with Tortorella. So, that's why it's so surprising, because the team still was competing pretty hard, and they just aren't. There's just too big of a talent gap between them and nearly every other team in the league now.
So news only about, you know, 6 or 7 hours old here, but it's already jump-started an awful lot here in Vancouver of conversation about the potential for Rick Tocchet becoming the next coach of the Philadelphia Flyers. Is that front and center and front of mind in Philadelphia as well?
Well, it is with me. I mean, I can't tell you how many people have mentioned that to me just even before John Tortorella got even before his comments the other day. So, you know, certainly I think if the front office is worried about optics, which I'm not sure that they are at the moment, but if they are, Rick Tocchet is certainly a name that resonates in this market. I mean, so many Flyers fans that have stuck with this team through the good times and, you know, mostly the bad times for the last decade remember Rick Tocchet for what he was on the ice and as sort of the embodiment of what they figure a Philadelphia Flyer is. So, you know, he's very good friends with Keith Jones. I think that's pretty well known. I would imagine they stay in contact together. I remember one time we're up there, and I don't know if it was 2 years ago, but I remember Tocchet mentioning offhand how he had had dinner with Keith Jones the night before. So certainly there are some lines of communication there. We'll see. You know, like I said, we didn't talk to Danny Briere yet, so we're not sure what he has in mind. Does he want to give Brad Shaw a longer look as more of an interim basis? We don't know that yet, but certainly Tocchet's a guy that, you know, I don't know much about gambling. I'm not a gambler, but I would think he'd be at the top of the odds list when it comes to the next Flyers coach, to be honest.
Kevin, where do the Flyers go from here over the course of this summer? I mean, what's next for this team? Starting with the coach, but beyond that, overall direction, are they going to stay in rebuilding mode next year, or is it time to begin to push chips into the center of the table here?
I don't think there's any question they're going to try to add players this summer. They are going to try to get better. That's something that Danny Briere has been very clear about for a little while here. They still have some dead money on the cap next season, but, you know, I think the fact that they've got Matvei Michkov here earlier than they expected. They've got guys like Travis Konecny and Travis Sanheim, who they still believe in, locked into long-term contracts. You know, the recent results are what they are, but I think foundationally and culturally, they're pretty happy with where things are. But, you know, they've got to start adding. So, you know, everyone wants to judge Danny Briere on the job he's done so far. It's just too early to do that. You know, he's not even through two full years yet. And all he's really done is subtracted. He's been dealing players for future assets. That was the plan all along. So, you know, it's obviously a lot easier to tear down a team than to build a successful one. I think the tear down so far has been pretty successful. You know, you got 3 first-round picks, 4 second-round picks going into this year's draft. I would think they'll use some of those, and I would think they're going to use some of them in a trade for a player that could help them now. So, you know, I don't know if we want to use the word rebuild for next season, but certainly I think they want to start to try and turn a corner and become a better hockey team going into next season.
And considering where they find themselves as a franchise, you know, beyond the specific connections with Tocchet or other potential candidates, what are the qualities they're going to be looking for in their next coach first and foremost?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I want to hear Danny talk about that a little bit, but, you know, certainly I think they're going to look for a coach that maybe is a little bit. It sounds silly because from Tortorella, it's probably easier to find anybody that's a little bit more of a player friendly coach. But I don't know. I don't know the answer to that because they're still a very young hockey team. I mean, I think right now they're like the 4th youngest team in the league. I don't expect them to get all that much older next season. So. I don't know. Maybe you go with a younger coach, but I would guess they're going to look for a more established coach, you know, like so many of these general managers do, just because I think they want to – I don't think they completely want to lose what Tortorella built. So maybe someone that's a little like Tortorella, just maybe not as prone to outbursts or what you will, whatever you want to call it.
Kevin, really appreciate you taking some time on a busy day for you. Thanks for doing this.
Yep. Thanks, guys.
And that is Kevin Kurz from The Athletic covering the Philadelphia Flyers. And as you heard there, you know, still waiting to hear more from Danny Briere about exactly what went into the decision to fire John Tortorella. And, you know, people are saying, well, look, there's 10 games left in the season. That is kind of a surprising time to fire John Tortorella. Of course, you have to put it in context with his comments. I think Pierre LeBrun said there were maybe some behind-the-scenes comments between Rick Tocchet, between John Tortorella and Danny Briere recently as well. But you go back just a couple of years ago, and it wasn't just like, well, we're going to see how things work with John Tortorella. When they hired Keith Jones and Danny Briere, or promoted Danny Briere to GM, it was very much John Tortorella's part of the leadership group of this franchise. Like, he is just as important as those two other guys. And there's been speculation over the last couple of years that, well, when his time is up as a coach, maybe he'll take on a role in the front office. That's where people thought this was going with Torts and Philadelphia. So to have it go from that to you're gone, you're out with 10 games remaining is a pretty surprising turn, even if I guess you could kind of see the writing on the wall after this week.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, you know, Torts might have that might have been intentional, right? Torts might have wanted to move on.
Well, he might have just been being very honest. Like, I'm not interested in this.
Yeah,
this isn't doing it for me anymore.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah,
right. And look, that wouldn't be outside the realm of possibility. I mean, Torts is technically a brilliant hockey coach, but we know that there's a volatility there in terms of his personality, in terms of his reaction in difficult situations. We also know, you know, everyone who's ever worked with him will tell you he's like the best boss you could have in the league, like a really conscientious. Yeah. So, you know, he's just a complicated individual.
Yep. As we all are, really. But
yeah.
But especially Torts.
him more than most.
Him more than most.
But, you know, he's super talented. He's just also, I think he wears out his welcome, but I also think he wears people down, right? Like, he wears out his welcome from his own perspective as well.
Right. Well, yeah, to the point where he is like, man, I'm not enjoying this.
Right.
This sucks.
Yeah. And is probably honest enough with himself about what he's enjoying and not enjoying, right? Whereas other people might, you know, handle that situation a little differently, a little less explicitly.
Another update from the NCAA tournament where Boston University is up big now, 6-3 with about 5 minutes left against Ohio State. Cole Eiserman added another. So they've exploded 3 goals in the third period to take that 6-3 lead. And it looks very, very likely that Tom Volander's season will continue with Boston University into the second round.
Do you have the bracket open?
The
like,
NCAA
what's the
tournament?
Next game? What's our next Tom Volander watch date?
I do not have the bracket open. Let me see if I can do it here.
Yeah. So look, I mean, great for Tom Volander and BU. They've sort of underperformed, I think, relative to expectations this year. I mean, Cole Eiserman was supposed to be a huge add. They lost two guys who are probably going to be Calder nominees this year off the same team, and that's a tough to replace. But there was still a lot of talent there. Right. You lose Hudson and Celebrini, but that's still a pretty good roster and not a huge surprise if they're pulling off an upset. And, you know, maybe they can go Cinderella here.
Boston U, who, by the way, have just gone up 7-3. So they continue to pile it on. They will play the winner of Michigan State and Cornell. Michigan State's the second seed in the tournament, so they'll be heavy favorites there. They'll play the winner of Michigan State and Cornell on Saturday.
Yeah.
So
although never sleep on Cornell.
Sure.
Because
classic, of course. I say that to myself all the time.
Never sleep on Cornell. Never sleep on Cornell in hockey, because I guarantee you, if you go check the birth dates of those players, there's a lot of guys.
They're like, all like 25.
There's a lot of guys. I bet you there's at least a few guys born in the 90s. I'm not kidding, man.
Oh, man. Now I'm so curious.
Yeah. Cornell always has, like, honestly, Cornell's a really good team to watch.
A lot of guys who are doing like graduate, landscaping at Cornell, right?
Right. If you're, I'm so serious. If you're like trying to get a sense of whether or not the college player that your team has as a prospect can hack it or not, go watch them play against Cornell. Because that's them playing basically against grown men.
No
90s.
They do have 5 guys born in the year 2000.
Right.
Yeah. So they have and the guy who turns 25 tomorrow.
Cornell shows up and they are like solidly 30 pounds heavier on average. You know what I mean? Like, they roster dudes.
Well, they'll be in tough tomorrow against, or today against Michigan State.
Yeah.
And then Boston University will play the winner of that game on Saturday. So
Michigan State, though, has that Isaac Howard kid, Lightning prospect,
yeah,
who like absolutely could just get added to the Lightning's roster for the playoffs here at some point. And super fast, kind of a dog having a great season, like just feels like that annoying guy you've never heard of. It's like Isaac Howard has scored for the 4th time in this series. Like, yeah.
And so it's important to note, it doesn't necessarily change the timing all that much on a potential Tom Volander deal, right? Like it's another 48
hours.
Another 48 hours. They're on the road anyways now. It's not like he was going to be in the game on Sunday or something anyways, right? They have had a couple days off after they get back to Vancouver. So it doesn't change the math too much, but it looks very likely that his Boston U team will keep playing at the NCAA tournament. I wanted to read this tweet actually that came in from Birdie's Sideburns on Twitter, who says, what I really liked about the game last night, how seamlessly the kids are plugging into the lineup, the Abbey experience, the coaching staff so close in Vancouver, it's coming together nicely, such a massive difference compared to Utica. And I think that's a really good point. I think I've seen a lot of people start to kind of take notice of the job that Manny Malhotra has done in Abbotsford this year. They're also red hot right now, so they're going back to the playoffs again in the AHL playoffs. And we've had the chance to chat with Ryan Johnson a few times on our show, and I think he's always done a really good job there as well. And just that point about the investment in Abbotsford starting to really pay dividends, they've had to rely on a ton of different people coming up from Abbotsford at various points this year. And in some ways, you can look at it and say, well, none of them have really like popped to the point where they had to stick here, right? Arshdeep Baines has been up and down. Max Sasson came up, went back down. You know, Ratu's been up a couple times. Carlson, you go down the list. Like, guys have been going back and forth. So in a way, you could look at it as a point of frustration. I guess DPD would be the exception there. But I think it's also pretty admirable if they have, you know, five or six forwards at the AHL level that you feel pretty good about plugging in to the NHL team at this point. And certainly guys like Linus Karlsson and Atu Ratu, as we were talking about earlier, the whole idea of we want to build a organization-wide identity where there's a certain way we want to play so that when you come up from Abbotsford, you know what's expected of you and you can go into the lineup and do it. That's what stands out to me about a guy like Linus Karlsson. He's a wall guy, right? He knows what Rick Tocchet wants. He knows he has to be strong on the puck. He knows he has to do these certain things. And he goes out there and he does it. Manny Malhotra deserves a lot of credit for that. Ryan Johnson, I think Rick Tocchet deserves credit for that. It's definitely been an important theme over the last couple of games here for the Canucks.
No question. And well, and I think, I think DPD getting thrown in there is crucial too, right?
Yes.
You know, like the guys who've gone down for a while and been ready to play. I mean, Linus Karlsson's sort of different in that he's been reliable, bottom of the lineup, low ceiling guy. I think last year too, right? Wouldn't you say?
Who?
Linus Karlsson?
Yes. Yeah, for sure.
Like he's just one tool short of being really, really good.
Yep.
And it's just too bad.
It is. But again, I think it speaks very highly of what Manny Malhotra has been able to do.
For sure.
In Abbotsford in his first year as a pro head coach.
Well, and that team's playing really well.
Yeah.
I mean, they're legitimately that Abbotsford Canucks team, they've had a lot of absences. The Canucks have been hurt throughout the year, and when an NHL team is hurt, that there's a trickle down, a knock on effect that impacts the AHL team. Despite all of that, they've played, you know, pretty consistently, pretty well all season long, despite not being, you know, the sort of big spender that some other American League teams are. Credit to them.
All right, we'll take a break.
Also,
here.
Their goaltending hasn't been good, and
yeah,
they've still been winning.
That's a big part of the story, too. We'll take a break here. We got one final segment left, so send your text in 650-650 to the Dunbar Lumber text line. Canucks talk on Sportsnet 650. To Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd. It's Thomas Drance. A little rockabilly from producer Zach. I like it. Spreading. We're expanding our genre horizon here on the show.
We need an identity.
Yeah.
No, our identity is not going
not
to be rockabilly.
No. I don't think that's for the first
no
thing.
No rockabilly,
that pops into
no
mind.
Jazz.
No. I don't mind rockabilly.
Definitely not jazz.
I like having a wide selection, a wide variety. I enjoy it. Keeps me invigorated. Keeps me guessing.
I would like a simple guitar riff.
Don't want to get. What do you mean? Like just no with no backing, just
bow,
guitar.
Bow, 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 and then we start.
So you're talking about like an old school, like classic rock sports radio.
100%.
Yeah.
And then I also want, because this is one thing.
Where we have like Diet Coke and we're wearing sunglasses.
100%. And this is one thing we don't have at the station generally, right? We don't have a host that's known solely by a nickname.
Right.
That is also either a college basketball mascot, like a bulldog.
Okay. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Or an item of junk food, like cheese or beef.
Cheese isn't junk food.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Cheese is healthy.
Cheese is dairy. It's a dairy product. That's not what junk food means.
What junk food do you eat that doesn't have cheese?
Junk
pizza?
Junk food is like candy.
Hamburgers? That's not junk food.
Candy is like junk fast food.
Candy and chips and like.
Yeah. Chips. You melt cheese on your chips?
No, I don't.
On your potato chips?
On your nachos?
This is a wild take that cheese is a like instrumental part of junk food.
If you order pizza, do you order it with cheese?
Yes. Hot dogs, no cheese.
You don't order a cheese dog?
Occasionally, but it's not an important part of a hot dog.
Occasionally.
And chips is the best example. Like, chips is the classic junk food.
Yeah, okay. Well, so not all junk food has cheese, but lots of it does.
Yeah. I also think that, like, candy and chocolate bars and stuff are junk food.
Yeah, that's fine. Okay, well.
You're backtracking a lot here now.
Should I have said fast food? Would that have been?
Yeah.
Okay, fine. A fast food item.
There we go.
Like cheesesteak, which has both beef and cheese.
Cheesesteak?
Yeah.
That'd be good.
So I think.
Should I rebrand as cheesesteak?
Cheesesteak Dodd?
Yeah. We need someone like, That, you know, my co-host Cheesesteak had a good take on this the other day. So, or you could be Horned Frog or Bulldog.
My favorite junk food.
That's a reference to the TCU Horned Frogs.
TCU Horned Frogs. Because Bulldog works.
Shout out to LaDainian Tomlinson. Yep. I like that.
Horned Frog?
I don't know about Horned Frog.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a mouthful.
Sticking. Yeah.
A little bit of a mouthful.
What are the other?
Gator? You could be Gator.
Jayhawk?
Jayhawk? You could be Jayhawk.
I like Jayhawk.
Yeah, and your name's Jamie.
Yep. Oh, now we're talking.
Wildcat? You want to be Wildcat?
No, I don't want to be Wildcat. I'd rather be the Bulldog. Well, I have on Halford and Bruff, I have toyed with Jimmy Dodd character.
Right.
That's like the throwback. Obnoxious sports radio host with the sunglasses and everything.
And now you could
maybe we could incorporate that.
And now you could be Cheesesteak.
Jimmy Cheesesteak Dodd. I think, I don't know whether we'll implement it
immediately,
but I think if.
I think, you know, Cheesesteak has potential.
If God willing, we're on the air next season. I think this has legs.
I think Cheesesteak and Jayhawk both have. Legs.
I like Jayhawk, I have to say. I do enjoy Jayhawk.
Pretty good.
We can get like the hawk call sound.
Like the Assassin's Creed.
Yeah. All right, there we go. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. I have no idea what I was about to say before we got onto this. Oh, you were going somewhere with that. No, you weren't. Never mind. It was just about the music. Okay, I want to read this text, and I'll give everyone a hot take warning before I read it, but it is representative of a certain amount of texts that have come into the inbox today, so I want to read it. I want to give it a chance to breathe here, and we can talk about it. It's from Kev, the tired Canucks fan, who says, "It's not by accident that the hashtag EP40 Black Cloud has temporarily been removed, and suddenly there is heart and effort and fun around the Canucks." Now, I said earlier that I thought you could look at the last two games and say two of their most high effort games of the year. Maybe the two, if you're looking for two consecutive high effort games, the best example of the season. But I do think it's fair to note also that they played really well against the Rangers, even though they came up short and lost that game. There was certainly a high level of effort and fun in that game from the Canucks.
The Jets game?
Here's my take on this, because I don't think it's completely off base, but I don't think it's like there's a negative way to spin this. Like, oh, EB40 goes home and all of a sudden they're playing so hard and everything. The negative way is because he is bringing the vibe down. He himself is bringing the mood down and the atmosphere around the team. I don't think that's what's going on. I think if anything, it's as simple as guys know they have to step up. It's crunch time, and you just lost your best player, your best forward, your most highly paid forward, and another guy who was playing really well and putting up points. If you don't go all out in that situation, that's pretty alarming. You know what I mean? So I think it's, if any, I see what people are saying. Like, I've noticed it too. I've thought that too. I was like, oh, that's interesting. We're seeing a really high level of effort that we haven't necessarily seen consistently throughout this season. As you point out, it's not as if it just started once Elias Pettersson left the team with his most current injury. You can point to recent games going back in March as well. The Jets, for example, the Calgary comeback, which he was a big part of, scoring that late goal. But I also just think it's as simple as guys are looking around and saying, well, it's not up to anyone else. It's up to me. I can't rely on a star player. I can't hope that Petey continues to find his game and gets it done for us. I have to go out and do it. I have to go and play my hardest. You couple that with all of a sudden having four guys who have spent a lot of time in the AHL in the lineup, you know they're going to be juiced to say, oh man, these are big games. Like, this is a massive opportunity for me. I'm going to bring that level too. Demko coming back, that giving a boost of a team. Like, I get what people are saying, but I think it's as simple. I think Petey could be, everyone could love him and he could be the most popular teammate in the world, and him leaving on injury could still juice the effort level from the team just because you know you have to step up in these circumstances.
Yeah, whatever you say, cheesesteak.
Another classic cheesesteak.
Sorry. No, I think you're right, and I think that's part of it. What I do think is the kernel of truth in that text, which I don't agree with, but I think there's a kernel of truth within that, hidden within that take, that I think is wrong. And what I think it is that for fans anyway, to some extent, just given the way this season has gone, the frustrations that have abounded, and how much oxygen the Pettersson versus Miller debate has taken on, right? And I don't mean the experience within the team. I don't mean what Quinn Hughes says when he's like, it's been a hard season, or Rick Tocchet when he's been like, man, this has been a long season, really challenging. Yep. I don't mean what Jim Rutherford says to Gary Mason. Like, put all of that aside. I mean from the perspective of an outsider looking in, who maybe engages with Canucks talk, the show on the radio or on Twitter or on Reddit or on HF boards, whatever message boards are in vogue these days. There's been a lot of content that's just been like, Pettersson, he's the one, like, da da da, and or a lot of like, can't believe they traded JT, they traded the wrong guy. Look at, it's constant. It's been exhausting. Mm-hmm. It's defined the entire season from a fan experience, right? And to just have these games where it's like, they matter. They're meaningful games in March, and to some extent, it's like, neither guy's there, and it's just a bunch of guys scrapping and trying hard, and you get to see Quinn Hughes and Thatcher Demko playing at their best, and mm-hmm. it's like, yeah, this is fun. I think it's that, man. I think it's as simple as the fan experience has been distracting over the course of the year because of all of the oxygen that, like, Pettersson's struggles took up, and then JT Miller's unexplained absence, and then the TIFF, and who will they trade, and then the trade, and then the did they trade the right guy debate when Pettersson continued to struggle, and then the he's back debate when he started to... Just like, man, I think for fans, it's probably just nice to move past it.
And you know what else you're not doing as a fan in these last couple of games is putting Elias Pettersson under the microscope on a shift-by-shift basis, right? And looking and squinting for any sign that he's back, or squinting for any sign that he isn't back, or noting the gaffes he makes, or noting the, hey, he held onto the puck and made a nice pass on that zone. I'm gonna tell my friends about that later when they complain about his salary, right? Like, you're not watching these games with an eye to participating in the Elias Pettersson discourse.
Right.
And I think that's a huge deal, because once you get locked into that mode, it's hard to get out of it. I
100%.
I've made this comparison before, but it reminded me so much of the Luongo-Schneider dynamic, where those games at the peak of the controversy started to have this miserable feel, because you knew any goal that went in was immediately going to be placed under this microscope of how would the other guy have handled it. And as soon as Luongo let in a goal, it's like, well, I don't think Schneider would have saved that one. And that was one of the dominant experiences if you were a really hardcore Plugged In fan who, you know, as you said, participates in message boards or talks on social media and all of that, listens to sports radio. Like, that was one of the things you were talking about all the time. And it's gotten to a similar level with Pettersson, where, like, how many times have we talked about what are fundamentally minor plays for Pettersson in either way, whether it's, hey, look at that. That was a, you know, he did a nice job poking the puck away on the forecheck there. That's good. He can build on that. Or, you know, he didn't have quite have his legs on this shift. Like, the amount of inconsequential plays that have been placed under the microscope and poured over for Elias Pettersson is astronomical this year. And if you're wondering, I think you make a great point. If you're wondering why, purely from a fan's perspective, these last couple of games feel different, is we're not doing that. We're not squinting for any sign of, to, you know, bolster your Pettersson take. You're just, as you said, watching these guys scrap and watching these guys try to make it to the playoffs.
Yeah, and so I think, you know, it's not, yeah, the amount of he can build on this this season has been brutal.
It's been tough.
But the truth is too, is that, like, I think his work rate's been not been what has caused his struggles. It's been the lack of juice. It's been the lack of dynamism, right? So I totally understand hearing what we're saying as a fan of this team and as a fan of Elias Pettersson and being like, that's unfair, because it kind of is, right? But look, people's reaction and people's fatigue to a team that's performed at a mid-level, that's scrapping for their playoff lives to this point, despite having the talent to be a lot better than that, you know, that's not something people can necessarily control. It's not about what's fair or what's unfair. It's just kind of the reality that these last couple games have felt like a breath of fresh air in the absence of some of the key figures of, you know, what's been a pretty difficult season. Now, I think that, like, my understanding is Pettersson and Hoglander aren't, like, flying to Winnipeg here. Road trip's almost over, and they're not going to be options for the next two games. At least that's the plan.
Do you have a sense for after that? Because they play Winnipeg on Sunday, then you have Monday, Tuesday off, and then Seattle at home on Wednesday, and then two more days off before you play the Ducks.
That's it. That's a nice
way to return
right
home.
There. I don't have a sense of it beyond that. And this could change. My understanding, though, was that the club was not planning for those guys to rejoin the team on the road trip. And I think Pettersson can get back in the lineup and be part of this feeling that this team has moved through what's been, you know, a dark cloud that's hung over them all campaign.
Right. It's not as if the dark cloud is going to return just because he gets back in the lineup.
No. So more than anything, what I think I'm trying to say is, like, that feeling that part of the reason that this is fun is that Pettersson's not in the line. That's projection. That's your experience, man. And I think that's important to remember here. But your experience is totally valid, given what watching this team has entailed and what it's felt like for much of this season.
There's a reason a lot of people have had the same thought. What? As I said, it's not like that was just a text that came in. I was like, wow, that hasn't occurred to me. We've seen lots of texts like
totally.
That. I've thought it. How could you not think it? Of course you're. Of course it's going to occur to you.
I've been thinking about it mostly because I know Jason Brough is. And, you know, I think it's a totally reasonable way to be thinking about it, honestly. But that said, like, when I think about the reaction of the bench and the reaction of everybody to the Derek Forbert goal, right? How happy everyone looked and seemed, how engaged they seemed. And the Suter pass off to Sherwood. It's like, that did feel different to me. That did feel like a team that had maybe hopefully come through the dark tunnel of this season and emerged on the other side. And that's a vibe that I just want to see the rest of the way. You're not always going to scrap and win. Right? Like, these aren't all going to be wins, most likely. I mean, I'll leave the door open for a miracle. But I do think that this team's struggles have been in part because of that lack of spirit. Like, I do think the lack of joy around this group contributed to the disappointment of this season, especially because I think it spilled over into their inconsistency from an effort perspective, from a max work rate perspective. And I think more than anything, like, in terms of what I want to see, I just want to see this team play that way. And I don't buy that it's directly connected to Pettersson's absence by any means, but I totally get why fans would feel that way.
Keith the Water Guy says, you guys are overanalyzing the overanalyzation of Pettersson.
No.
Guilty as charged.
I don't know. I think we're analyzing it the right amount.
Perfect. Just the right amount. We would never over or underlize this, underanalyze a single thing on this show. Lucas the Fuel Guy texts in, and we were talking earlier about the management group's record, track record in unrestricted free agency, some of the hits they've had, some of the misses, and of course their pattern of moving on very quickly from the misses. And Lucas the Fuel Guy says, can it look bad on the club the fact that they sign guys and then move on so quickly? Could other free agents be weary or wary of signing in Vancouver given that that's the case? That's an interesting question. I'm sure on the margins maybe it could impact things. You know, like Dan Heinen, I'm sure, was really excited to come back and play for his hometown team. And honestly, obviously did not last particularly long. And now he's playing elsewhere. Vincent Desharnais, 2-year deal. He goes elsewhere. I also think if you're talking about players at that end of the market, and especially a Pugh Suter type who they got in August to a really cheap deal, those guys don't necessarily have a ton of options. And it's not as if it's been an issue with them at the top of the free agent market. I guess you could point to Ilya Mikheyev. That was a fairly, you know, that wasn't a bargain approach. That was a guy they signed early and committed a lot of money to. It also wasn't the quickest turnaround compared to some of these other names that we're talking about. I guess, could that play a factor? Could teams be a little bit more skeptical? But ultimately, if you are
players, in this market, I mean, I think it maybe it impacts, like, here's where it could impact things, but probably won't. It could impact things in terms of getting your foot in the door to pitch the Ehlers, Marner, Bennett tier, with tons of options.
But
it could. I'm not saying it will.
But to me, it's just such, like, Nick Ehlers, I don't think, is looking at himself as like and being like, oh, I'm worried about what happened to Ilya Mikheyev and Carson Soucy.
No, no.
He's in a completely different tier of that.
Sorry. You're missing my point, though. It's one of those things that matters at the margins because what's going to determine everything is money.
Yeah.
Money. Period. Money.
Right. So if you're off, if you're making a competitive offer financially.
No, if you're making the best offer.
Sure.
But right. Like the most of the time.
My point is, how is it going to stop you from getting in the door to make that pitch?
Well, because for those players, money's not the issue. Everyone's offering the same amount. Like, you see what
right.
I'm saying?
When you're
talking about, like, how did the Canucks get Dakota Joshua? Right. People will say, Dakota Joshua, what do you mean? Canucks went to 2 years and $825K.
Yeah.
He had like 15 offers. All of them, they were like, so, but how did the Canucks land Dakota? They were the high bidder. How did that's what it comes down to. Familiarity, all that stuff kind of matters, right? Like Teddy Bluger, 2 years times 1.5 was the, or 1 year times 1.5, that was the original deal. Like, go look and you'll see. You can see, like, Nick Bjugstad signed for like the same rough cap hit, but an extra year, right? Like, you can literally see how guys are slotted. You offer the most money, most of the time you get the free agent. You add a second year, you get the Kiefer Sherwood, right? It's outbidding. Like, for 95% of free agent decisions are made based on that. And the ones that aren't are literally just the top guys.
Yeah.
So that's why, sorry, that's what I was saying.
So I see what you're saying. It's like you can't outspend the issue the way you can on other players.
Correct.
Potentially. I find it very hard to believe that if you're Mitch Marner or Sam Bennett, you're worried because you're getting no trade protection, right?
Oh,
you know what
sure.
I mean? Like, there's so many other things that go into it.
Sometimes getting no trade protection if you're Carson Soucy.
Yes. That's
and it
a good
sometimes
point.
Doesn't matter. I mean, the truth is that no trade protection matters until you make a guy. Make it clear to a guy that you're not part of an organization's plans. No one wants to stay.
I just think it's completely different.
People really need to get
like
over the
10-year-old. When you're talking about a top end on a 7-year deal or 6 or 7 year deal versus Carson Soucy on a 3-year.
Oh, I'm not saying it will. Like, I'm selling on the idea that teams will wait this. Like, what are the Canucks going to have to offer free agents? Money. And if you offer the most, you probably get the guy and, you know, jobs and opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there for every Mikheyev, right, for every Soucy, for every Heinen, go on down the list, you're going to have a Pugh Suter.
A Kiefer Sherwood.
Right, but specifically, like a Pew Suter. What's Pew Suter's next contract look like on July 1? When you're bargain hunting, what's going to matter more to people? Oh, I might get dealt, or, hey, that guy went there and then turned around and signed for X.
Dakota
right?
Joshua, same thing.
Joshua's a perfect example, right? Yep. They're, Ian Cole, I mean, had at least his value was flat. Right. Like there's a lot of guys who will have come in. Sam Lafferty got another contract on and on. So, you know, I think those are factors that will matter more. Opportunity matters. Money matters. I think the other considerations, those matter for the top guys and probably won't matter from a Canucks perspective.
All right. That is the show for today. Thank you to everyone for texting in. It's another Canucks game day tomorrow. They are in Columbus to take on the Blue Jackets. Big game on the Edertown scoreboard tonight, or big night, I should say, on the Edertown scoreboard, and then another big game for the Canucks, and we will have it all covered here tomorrow on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.